A few weeks ago, we heard two of the debates from the special International Women's Day Junior Tynwald sitting, at which students from the island secondary schools and UCM raised several issues that concern them. There were three debates we've not heard so far, and we'll hear later in the programme the debates on mental health and neurological conditions, and education in gender discrimination. First, though, we hear from the Ballacameen students about their debate on legal protections and accountability measures to address gender-based violence.
I'm Holly McAvoy, and I'm from Ballacameen High School.
You're here for International Women's Day, this celebration of International Women's Day in Tynwald, and you will be speaking in the Tynwald Chamber. What motion is it that you're bringing forward?
I want to strengthen the legal framework for women who are going through the trial process of domestic violence court cases.
I imagine you've done a lot of research into this. What sort of things have you discovered?
So in 2023, there were 669, the Isle of Man Constabulary attended 669 complaints of domestic violence, and only 49 went through to prosecutions.
I mean, that's shocking, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really bad. And 72% of domestic violence cases are from women. Oh, sorry, the victim is a woman. So, yeah, it affects them.
And why is that? I mean, presumably there must be reasons as to why such a small percentage of complaints actually result in serious action being taken.
Well, I think a lot of women drop out because of things financial situations. If they have children with the offender, then they struggle to get childcare and things like that for court proceedings. Also out of fear, coercion and stuff from their attackers and things.
And what's the solution to this? I mean, I imagine there you've had the opportunity to see some good practice in other parts of the world.
So I think that we should have things like designated courts and things, so we have fast trials, and also video testimony, so that the women and stuff don't have to face their attackers and things and bring back all the trauma and things. So,
and what do you hope your motion today is going to achieve?
Well, I hope that we can help more women proceed through to trial, and more prosecutions happen, and maybe hopefully, because of the actual amount of people that are being prosecuted for, it decreases the amount of incidences and attacks.
There are several Tynwald members. We're talking at the I suppose you might call it the reception, the before the actual sitting. Several Tynwald members here. What do you hope that they will get from what you are about to say in the Tynwald Chamber?
Well, I hope that they realise that there is a massive problem with how we handle cases like this, and I hope that they review and consider changes.
That was Holly from Ballacameen High School. Let's hear now the debate capably chaired by Acting President of Tynwald, Anne Corlett.
So, on the order paper today, we've got five motions, and we're going to start off with number one on the order paper, which is legal protections and accountability measures to address gender-based violence. And I call on the Honourable Member for Douglas North, Holly McAvoy.
Thank you, and good afternoon, Madam Chair and Honourable Members. While the Domestic Abuse Act of 2020 strengthened the legal definition of abuse and expanded police powers, legislation alone is not enough. In 2023, the Isle of Man Constabulary attended 669 domestic incidences, but only 49 led to charges. This shows how procedures can fail women seeking justice. The increasing use of domestic abuse prevention orders compared with the decreasing prosecution rate using the new legislation highlights that the justice system is still not effective in preventing harm and bringing perpetrators to account. 72% of domestic abuse victims are women, meaning these gaps affect them disproportionately. I propose automatic access to remote testimony, faster case handling, dedicated courts and practical support such as childcare and temporary financial assistance for the court process so women can safely engage with the justice system. Accountability for perpetrators must never come at the expense of the safety and dignity of victims. Thank you, Madam Chair. I beg to move.
Thank you. I now call on the Honourable Member for Douglas North, Eleanor Wheeler.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and Honourable Members. I would like to second this motion as this House also believes that further measures are needed to enhance victim safeguarding. Current constabulary safeguarding methods emphasise the immediate risks but rely on charities to fill the gap. Although victim support counselling is available, funding constraints and a 23% rise in demand mean access to support has become increasingly difficult. As a result of this, I would suggest allocating more funding towards support services, as only 35% of income is provided by the government, compared to the £2.6 million spent on modernising the NSC and the £660,000 for modernisation of the airport terminals, which is fully provided by the government. I believe a rethink of priorities to the government is necessary to enhance victim safeguarding. Thank you, Madam Chair. I beg to second.
Honourable Member for Douglas South, Ms Kringle.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and Honourable Members. Can I thank my fellow colleagues for bringing their motion to Tynwald, and I would like to support it by making a further comment on anonymity. I believe that we should remove perpetrator anonymity in sexual assault cases. At present, it seems that we are prioritising the safety of the offender over the safety of our public. Whilst it is understood that naming the offender could result in concerns for their safety, I struggle to understand why this is any different from other cases, such as murder. I can see no reason why perpetrator anonymity should be different in these cases, and I believe that we should name these people as the public deserve to know the identities of those who could pose harm to them. Furthermore, I believe that our island would benefit from implementing a domestic violence disclosure scheme, such as Clare's Law, which exists in the UK. This scheme allows an individual to ask the police if their current or ex-partner has a history of sexual violence or domestic abuse. This information is then released to the victim if the local authorities believe they may be at risk. Here, things are not as clear-cut as this. Whilst the police can make disclosures if they are made aware of a new relationship and believe that person is at risk of harm due to the partner's history, there is no official disclosure scheme. I believe this is not as accessible as it should be and potentially puts women in danger as there are 74 registered sex offenders living in the community. As women, we should have the opportunity to access information that directly impacts our safety. We need to make the island a safer place for women and allow us to proactively protect ourselves. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Honourable Member for Douglas East, Ms Jamsa.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and Honourable Members. I'd like to thank my fellow colleagues and further support their motion. I think most people would conclude that we live a fairly privileged life on this island. However, there are still many areas of life where inequality exists. One such an area is abortion rights, especially when it concerns sexual abuse victims, some of the most vulnerable members of society. Compared to the United Kingdom, our laws regarding abortion are regressive. At present, we have a 14-week termination window if you wish to be treated on the island. If a Manx citizen wishes to have a termination after this period, it requires a rather grueling journey to the UK, something that a fragile victim of sexual abuse may find rather intimidating, lonely, and scary. This law is most definitely not in the best interests of victims of such crimes. As an island, we must prioritise spending to make sure that we have the best levels of equipment and staffing to offer 24-week terminations on island, not off island. Abortion may not be a major legal election issue for many voters. However, in 2022, which is the most recent year of data that I could access, there were 213 abortions for women aged 15 to 44 on island. If we include the off-island abortions for week 14 to 24, this would be even higher. While this may be old data, it proves that a new discussion on women's reproductive rights should be a significant electoral issue. Not only is it essential when ensuring women's equality, but it will also further protect victims of sexual abuse, which is in all our interests. Thank you.
Now, honourable members, we come to vote on the motion before us. So, All those in favour, please say aye.
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 Against, no. The ayes have it, the ayes have it. The motion is carried.
You're listening to a special sitting of Tynwald with students from the island secondary schools. Next, I spoke to students from QE2 High School.
I'm Amber Petto and I'm representing QE2.
And I'm Kira Gadsby, also from QE2.
And you're here today because it is, it isn't International Women's Day yet when we're recording this, but it's about to be. What are you doing here, I suppose, is the obvious question.
So we're here to talk about the gender gap between mental health diagnosis and how men are generally diagnosed before women, and just try to make a change and see if there's anything we can do about that no longer being an issue.
And why is it the case? I mean, it seems quite extraordinary that is the case.
So women tend to be, especially with autism, women tend to mask their autism, which can often lead to either misdiagnosis or switch,
I think on top of that, with the masking, with men, we are aware, because of the funding and the research that's been put into male autism, we know the signs to look out for, but because women mask and because the signs are represented differently in women to men, doctors often don't know what to look for. So this problem and this gap has kind of emerged. So what we're kind of advocating for is, number one, a recognition that this is happening, that women are getting diagnosed less, and secondly, more of an initiative to kind of fund not only getting women diagnosed more, but kind of reducing the stigma around it and making awareness, because not many people are aware that men and women have the same levels of autism. Like, it's just that men are diagnosed more.
And I know when I was at secondary school, and that's some years ago now, I wouldn't have known any of this sort of thing.
Yeah.
You've obviously been doing quite a bit of research.
Yeah, so research also points to the fact that men are 4 times more likely to be diagnosed. So there is quite a big gap there. And, you know, it's not always people's fault, because there's just not as much time and focus on women's mental health as there is on men's, and we really just want to see a change come about, because there is no reason why women shouldn't have the same funding and the same attention as men's mental health.
Yeah.
And in terms of that research, I mean, what sort of things have you been doing?
So it's mainly our mover, so Ellie Reynolds. She has done extensive research. She found this one amazing study. It was a survey with men and women about autism levels, and it showed the age gap. So later we'll be discussing that in more detail about the specific age gaps. It's crazy to see. It's like, you know, most boys are diagnosed before 18, and women, it's like the majority of them are diagnosed after 34. So we're going to be talking about that in our debate. But she has looked through a wide range of Isle of Man research, but this study is the main focus of her research. And in that research, it obviously showed the gap in diagnosis, but it also showed how much people don't know about it. It was a majority was that people didn't know that women were being diagnosed less than men. So this is our focus, is about spreading awareness, basically.
So, I mean, it just seems to be a bit of a scandal, all this.
Yeah, and you know, you can't really blame anyone either, because there is just, like, a lot of misconceptions around it, and it's probably quite easy to be confused. But we hope that, especially through our key speakers, we'll be able to just really spread awareness and just share everything that we know on the topic, and just make a change in any way that we can, really.
It really does just start with awareness, and starting at a level like this, we're aware of how much something like this can change something. So if you start from this level, build upon that, then hopefully we're going to get to a point where women have that same equal access, treatment, awareness.
And you're both going to be in the Tynwald Chamber speaking.
Yep.
There's a general election coming up soon. any thoughts?
I don't have any thoughts yet, and I think I definitely need to do some more research and just make sure that I'm picking an option that works best for me and my beliefs. But yeah.
I would love to see the Isle of Man develop. I think with the Isle of Man, we are often undervalued. I think people think because we're such a small island, not a lot of change can happen, but I really think we can. I think it just, with things like this, it starts, I think, getting young people involved, a mix of all groups of people, societies, cultures. We all just need to come together and come to agreements. At the end of the day, it's just about making the Isle of Man better for everybody. And I think that is the focus. And I think things like this are really promoting that.
Well, Gurumayu, thanks both.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
That was Amber and Kira from QE2. Let's listen now to how they got on in the debate.
We now move to item number 2 on our order paper, and it's mental health and neurological conditions. And therefore I call on the Honourable Member for Glenfarb and Peel, Ellie Reynolds.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to draw attention to the gender gap in the diagnoses of mental health and neurodevelopmental disorders, mainly focusing on ADHD and autism. The House should establish if there are gender differences in accessing timely diagnosis and that access to support on the island is variable. According to the Global ADHD Network, there is a severe underdiagnosis of ADHD in women and girls, and when they are diagnosed, it is typically at a much later age than men. Women are generally diagnosed between the ages of 36 to 44, whereas men are generally diagnosed before the age of 18. According to the National Library of Medicine, of 16,500 individuals diagnosed with ADHD, only 20% of those were female. While Manx Care have acknowledged the general difficulties in getting an ADHD diagnosis on the island and have reported a £4 million investment to aid this, it is crucial that these funds are used as equally as able to accommodate both genders. And alongside this, we propose funding should be used to educate teachers and acknowledge that ADHD appears differently in girls than how it presents in boys, which appears to be the major stereotype still held by many on the island. The UK National Autistic Society note that according to the most up-to-date data, the ratio of diagnosed autistic males to females is 3-1, and correlating with ADHD, girls diagnosed with ASD are typically diagnosed at an older age than boys due to a continued perception that it is a male disorder. The Isle of Man is relatively behind in understanding and diagnosing neurodevelopmental conditions, supported by findings from their DHCS National Autism Strategy Consultation from 2022. It's clear there is a lack of resources available and a lack of both public and professional awareness. The study does also show that people either do think society treats autistic men and women differently, or they don't know or aren't sure. Relating to these findings, it's crucial to note 57% of responses to this survey were from or on behalf of autistic males, while only 37% were from or on behalf of autistic females. So it's likely there is a gender bias in the results, as autistic men may to some extent be naive to the gender systemic bias in society. In the island's national ASD strategy, the lack of education to both education and healthcare professionals on autism in girls is outlined, and yet in the action plan there is no mention of ensuring a solution to this. Many autistic girls must mask to adhere to the society's expectations. They fly under the radar and often become victim not only to their undiagnosed autism, but also other mental health conditions that they are at an increased risk at, such as depression or anxiety. The House should look to ensure these girls have just as equal an opportunity to receive a diagnosis and support as boys do. And this starts with awareness, which I acknowledge the island is aiming for, but crucially, the gender differences of this disorder should be known. And with that, I beg to move this motion.
I now call on the Honourable Member for Glenfarb and Peel, Ms Berry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am very pleased to second this motion because a diagnosis can completely change someone's life. It can give people answers, help them access support, and most importantly, allow them to understand themselves better. But when the process of attaining a diagnosis takes too long, the impact can be huge. People may struggle at school, at work, or in their daily lives without an explanation as to why. Families may also struggle to access the right support. Research from many countries suggests that gender can affect how quickly people are diagnosed for conditions such as autism and ADHD. For example, girls are diagnosed significantly later than boys, and research from Autistic Girls Networks UK suggests that girls may be diagnosed up to 6 years later than boys. This is not necessarily because boys experience these conditions more, but because the signs have historically been better recognised in boys, as it's been noted that females often mask their symptoms in an aim to fit in with society's behavioural expectations. I acknowledge that these studies referenced represent the UK. However, evidence of this difference is definitely present in the Isle of Man. For example, my younger sister, who has given me her permission to speak on her experiences, has been diagnosed with autism. However, this process took up to 5 years due to her symptoms often being masked, and therefore the methods used to diagnose did not suit her. The long process resulted in no support during her time in high school and made school life incredibly hard for her and those around her. For a small community like the Isle of Man, these questions are especially important because we have a smaller population and fewer specialist services. Any delays in diagnosis can have a severe impact on people's lives. That is why this motion matters. Understanding how our healthcare system works for everyone is an important step in making necessary improvements. For those reasons, I am pleased to second this motion.
Again, we come to vote on the motion before us. So all those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
All those against, no. Motion is unanimously carried. Thank you.
You're listening to a special sitting of Tynwald with students from the island secondary schools. The final debate we'll hear today is in the hands of students from Ramsey Grammar School.
I'm Jemima Kane from Ramsey Grammar School.
I'm Emily Musgrove, also from Ramsey Grammar School.
I'm Yvella Melinda, and I'm also from Ramsey Grammar School.
And what are you planning to say today? I don't know who wants to go first.
So we've decided as a group that we'd like to talk about gender discrimination in schools and how we think it should be improved by teaching young people about gender discrimination and how it comes up in our society at the moment.
And is that a big thing in schools, would you say?
Yeah, I mean, I think it definitely does get touched on, but I'd argue not enough. I think so many people don't realise that still to this day how big of an issue it is and how prevalent it is in society still.
What experiences would you say you've had where you would say that there's been discrimination?
Well, I personally haven't had any experiences I can refer to, but I think a lot of people think of it as an out-of-touch kind of situation where it's, oh, it only happens in this part of the world, or it happened 100 years ago, but doesn't realise that there are lots of like microaggressions that women face nowadays.
Any of you actually moving the motions, what have you had to do to be prepared to move this motion?
So, like, speaking to the group and stuff, talking about what sort of discrimination we see in schools and then, like, primary schools and then how we see it in secondary schools at the moment, and then just talking about ways that we can fight this because it is small subtleties, and as much as nobody particularly means for things to come across this way, it is still having an impact on people because as children you're very impressionable, and, like, psychologists know that your childhood is what shapes you as an adult, whether you subvert from what you've done as a child or you completely run into it yourself. It does become a lot of what we see as, like you say, microaggressions in adulthood, and we just wanted to talk about it and how important it is that we don't let these things keep happening.
And what are the obvious solutions? What would you change?
I think just more of a direct approach into teaching about it, and also maybe even letting people do their own research and come back and share that. Like, for example, I feel like one lots of people don't know about, but such a simple one is car crashes. Women are almost 50% more likely to die in a car crash because it's very predominantly they use male test dummies, which obviously have different physiology, different seating positions, stuff like that, that people think, oh, it doesn't matter anymore, but it's still very much happening today and that people can find out about and sort of just spread awareness that it's still here and happening.
And have you done any research into this? I mean, is it just conversations with fellow pupils? Or?
So I've had a few conversations with people from my family and with other students, but I think a lot of it was going away and doing our own research, making sure we've got, you know, evidence that we can use to also help, you know, come up with our own opinions about things. So I think it's actually been really good to kind of look more in depth about these, because you, again, as we said, in schools you don't directly get taught about it. It's not like we've heard this in other places. It's just kind of, we've been left to kind of do it on our own. So I think it's just been really helpful.
And you will be speaking in the Tynwald Chamber. There's a general election coming up soon. I mean, are you hoping that this debate might influence potential politicians?
I think it would be really good to see some of our politicians noticing these things and putting a change to them, definitely. But we also know that social change doesn't happen with the snap of a finger. Like, it takes a lot of commitment, a lot of flexibility, because not everybody's minds are going to change immediately. So it would be really nice to see at least somebody taking notice of it before it starts to develop into something else.
Do you know anyone who might take notice?
Well, yeah, obviously today there are a few MHKs here, I know, like, obviously in support, and hopefully, and I think not only that, obviously there's the ones here, and then I assume maybe some will listen in, hopefully take into account what's happened today and maybe put forward policies or just even awareness towards this very important topic.
And a good result for today, what does that look like?
I think it's just being heard, because obviously at the moment we are in a very, this last decade we're in a very good position in comparison to how we have been in the past, and I think just continually making more changes and kind of pushing towards equality for, you know, both genders and stuff. So I think it's just getting people to take notice in it, even people who are like, oh, what happened today, you know, what do you guys talk about and stuff, just kind of spreading more awareness. I think that's the ideal situation.
Well, thank you very much for agreeing to talk to Manx Radio.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That was Jemima, Emily and Avela. Here's the debate they led in the special International Women's Day Tynwald sitting.
Now we move to item 3 on our order paper, and education and gender discrimination. And I call on the Honourable Member for Ramsey, Emily Musgrove, to move.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Although we may not like that there are very traditional values surrounding gender, we are exposed to them from a very young age. In primary schools, many girls have experienced this when hearing things along the lines of, can I have 4 strong boys to move some chairs for me? Or hearing gendered language like man up, both being examples of how boys are seen as much stronger than girls, whether these adults mean to convey these things or not. Modern psychologists have shown that early experiences are what shapes us as people in our adulthood, and the language and values portrayed by our parents, guardians and teachers can be internalised, which lead to later stigmas in our adult lives. Children are very impressionable. If you grow up as a girl always hearing that boys are stronger than you, it's likely that you will take this into your adulthood, perhaps believing that you are not as capable as a man. Or vice versa, hearing these things as a young boy can lead to you believing that you must be strong, or believing that women aren't, and possibly leading to skewed outlooks on gender differences. And these standalone comments heard in childhood are not the only exception to hearing gender discrimination. Young women also hear it. For example, in hospitality jobs, many women experience being called bossy when being assertive or professional, whereas men would be called capable. Possible influences on gender perception. These are the reasons that we believe gender discrimination should be taught about in schools. If we teach our young children and young people about the ways in which gender discrimination can affect people, they will carry these values into their adulthood, by proxy avoiding any issues later in their lives. This could include simply changing gendered language that many of us hear at a young age, for example, police officer instead of policeman, or firefighter over fireman. Encouraging young people to pursue tasks or jobs traditional society assigns to the opposite gender, showing young people that jobs are not simply for men or women, having an impact on perceptions of gender, decreasing stigmas later in life. I beg to move. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Call on the Honourable Member for Ramsey, Ms. Malunda.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm happy to second this motion. Gender discrimination isn't biologically innate. It is socialised and taught to us from a young age. Although we are taught about gender inequalities as part of a range of our subjects at school, including history, geography, RMPS, etc., this tends to cover more prominent forms of discrimination, such as the gender pay gap, traditional gendered roles, and domestic violence. Both primary and secondary schools' curriculums lack a focus on more hidden forms of discrimination, largely against women and girls. And explicitly teaching what behaviours, language, and actions are classified as prejudiced, sexist, and discriminatory. I think that it's important that these specifically are learnt about, because women face microaggressions in almost every setting, and sexual harassment is highly prevalent in schools. For this reason, I beg to second. Thank you, Madam Acting Chair.
Now call on the Honourable Member for Onchan, Ms. Foster.
Thank you, Madam Acting Chair. I wanted to support this movement. Evidence suggests that sexism already exists within education, so ignoring it will not solve the problem. Schools are an integral part of moulding a student's attitudes and beliefs during their younger years. If students are never taught what gender discrimination looks like or why it's harmful, they may unknowingly repeat discriminatory behaviour they see in society, online, or even in their own communities. So education about discrimination is the solution in order for younger populations to recognise and challenge it. Evidence suggests that these sexist attitudes and behaviours already appear within schools. 29% of UK teachers report hearing sexist language in schools every single day, and over half of female students say that they have witnessed sexist language. This enforces the realism of the situation, showing that sexism isn't a hypothetical problem. This is an issue that many of us have and will encounter in both educational and professional settings. By teaching students directly about gender discrimination, schools can help them recognise these behaviours and understand their impact. Gender stereotypes can influence students' confidence, subject choices, and career paths. Addressing these ideas early ensures that students feel equally capable of pursuing any field, whether it's STEM, leadership, or creative industries. Therefore, teaching about gender discrimination is not about adding unnecessary content to the curriculum. It is about preventing harmful attitudes before they take root and helping create a fairer and more respectful school environment for everyone. Thank you, Madam Acting Chair.
Now call on the Honourable Member for Rushen, Ms. Callow.
Thank you, Madam Deputy President. I agree with what's been said, and I think that this harmful language, if not taught about and worked on, can also then lead to it being used later in circumstances like work and later on in life, which causes a harmful environment. There is also still plenty of gender inequalities around as well. For example, women are almost 50% more likely to be harmed in a car crash due to testing mainly being used on male dummies and not taking accountability women's physiology and seating position. Things like this and gender inequalities and gender discriminations are still very prevalent today, even though some people think that they've been sorted. And I agree that it's very important this motion gets moved to help resolve that. Thank you.
Call on Honourable Member for Council, Ms. North. Am I right? No, have I got your name wrong?
Am I North? Jean Fernley North? Oh,
no. Ms. Fernley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think I would like to support this motion. I think it's really important, rather than just focusing on, as it's been said, think kind of big moments in history where there's been gender discrimination, but also focusing on everyday sexism, everyday discrimination. I think it's a lot of the time pushed aside, normalised, and it shouldn't be, because it can install those existing sexist opinions. And I think it's really important to also avoid the sexist language, but then also avoid the standards we hold boys and girls to. You've quite probably, everyone has heard, boys will be boys. And I think it's really important that we don't disregard actions and stuff just because of a gender. So yeah, I would like to support this motion. Thank you.
Honourable Member for Garth, Ms. Gadsby.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just like to bring a consideration and maybe also a question to my Honourable Members. What would you propose we do about social media? I know social media has had a very big impact on everybody's lives here today, and I think with growing social media comes growing access for children. With younger children are getting access to more extreme views, they're getting exposed to misogynistic ideas from young ages. I just have a question. I think, as well with education, I think teaching about gender discrimination is important, but adding on top of that, I think we should teach media literacy and increase critical thinking. I think it's important to be able to teach everybody, but also young boys, how to recognize this harmful content. It usually starts small and snowballs and develops into harmful content. But if we're able to tackle this from a smaller point and teach these children how to look at content, realize it is harmful, or maybe what source it came from, you know, does it have ulterior motives? I think that should be a really important part of considering gender discrimination. We should also be teaching social media literacy. Thank you, Madam Chair.
I call on the Honourable Member for Ramsey, Ms. Musgrove.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I completely agree with you. When most of us were in about year eight, we had a bit of an epidemic in schools around Andrew Tate, who is a massive misogynist and a huge online presence, which had a huge impact on boys our age at the time. And I don't know about you guys, but I sure did hear a lot about it, especially like I've spoken to one of the RE teachers at our school, and she said that they actively had a meeting about how to tackle this. So it has definitely been noticed in our education system, which is a great step. But as we know, social change doesn't come immediately. It takes a lot of commitment. It takes a lot of flexibility in what you think should happen straight away. And so, like you say, if it starts with simply media literacy, that would be a really great way to teach our young people on deciding what sources they can believe in and learning about whether to trust a source just because it's a man on a podcast. Because that's not a great way to base your ideas when these people are just simply saying their opinions. There's no research going into them. So I completely agree with the media literacy point. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Members. Now we come to vote on item 3 on our order paper. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against? No. The ayes have it. The ayes have it. The motion is carried.
That was the last of the 5 debates which took place during the special International Women's Day Junior Tynwald sitting, at which students from the island's secondary schools and UCM raised several issues that concern them. Finally, we can hear from students from King William's College.
My name is Casey Puri, and I'm here with all my friends, and we're here representing KWC.
I'm Cleo Troitler, and I'm also from KWC. I'm Erin Ross-Monroe.
I'm Daisy Maddox.
I'm June Fernley.
And who is putting forward the motion today? Right, that looks like you, is it? Or is it a joint effort?
Well, we actually ended up entering this late, so we didn't pose a question. So we're more going to chip in ideas than actually bringing forward something to talk about.
And in terms of all the things that are there on the list of, I don't know, is there an order paper, whatever
yeah,
it is,
yeah.
What are the issues that, let's start with you. What are you most interested in?
I am most interested in gender-based violence and mental health diagnosis, particularly for ADHD and autism in women on the Isle of Man.
And yourself?
Probably the gender pay gap and why women are still not being paid as much as men.
Why is that?
I would say maybe they are not confident enough to or feel as though they would be able to ask for raises, or men are still being viewed as more qualified because women often are surrounded by stereotypes, being too emotional and just not qualified to be in leadership positions.
What are your interests in the debates this afternoon?
I would say diagnosis for autism in women, because I saw a thing on the Government Isle of Man website last year that they're trying to improve being more autism friendly, and they acknowledge that there's a lack of training and professionals to diagnose autism in women, as it's typically been a more male considered a neurological disorder.
And yourself, any particular topics that you're interested?
I think probably gender-based violence. I think it's obviously something that is very recognised, but I think there's still a huge way to go to protect the victims and families of victims, but also families of the people that are committing the violence. I think there's still a long way to go with that.
And in terms, I presume you've done quite a bit of research into this. I mean, what sort of things are you finding out?
Well, I found out that gender-based violence, like the perpetrators of it, they're not actually mentioned in court, like their names were not released, which obviously there's a for and against, but you know, a lot of that, I think if the names were released, that would help obviously get more victims to come forward, but obviously it's a bit difficult because, you know, if they're innocent, that can obviously really damage their reputation and career.
Yeah. Has anything shocked you?
Definitely when I was researching the healthcare aspect of everything, I was looking into different diagnosis rates and things such as endometriosis and the fact that clinical trials are mainly, well, the information that we have today are taken from clinical trials which were done on men. And for endometriosis diagnosis, it's taking around 8 to 10 years for women to get diagnosed, which I think is just, it blew my mind away.
And just, how does this make you feel?
Really unrepresented and a little just upset with the state of the world. Why are women still not being represented in our everyday lives, even though we're such an integral part of society?
And, you know, you were here doing this recording before the actual debate, and there are several Timbal members here. Many women now, there's an awful lot more women in the House of Keys now than there have been at any point in the past. That should change things, surely.
Yes, I feel that at the moment there still obviously is more men in politics than women, and I think that is just because of the delay. Men have typically been considered to be able to do politics, and it's only until recently that women have then been considered to be able to do politics and be leaders and viewed as a respected person of society.
Is any of this making you think, actually, you know what, maybe there's an election coming up in September, maybe I should have a go at this myself?
Well, yeah, I think it's really important to encourage girls of my age and around my age to go for those kind of positions. I think it's really important because I think that's a huge barrier, is not only men being favourited for these kind of jobs, but also women being too scared to go for them in the first place.
Well, thank you all. And
thank you.
That was Casey, Kira, Erin, Daisy and June from King William's College. And to finish the programme, here's part of a much longer interview Amy Griffiths recorded with MHK's Michelle Haywood and Anne Corlett about the issues facing women in politics.
Election coming up in, 6 months now? And what would you say to any, particularly women, but I suppose any marginalised part of society who is considering standing for election or isn't considering standing for election but thinks that they have a few ideas that might encourage them to? What advice would you give to them to about what it is like to be a politician, and particularly here on the Isle of Man?
For me, it's the best job I've ever had, honestly. You know, there are negatives, absolutely, but oh my word, it's an amazing job, and it's such an honour to have it. And I always think, you know, you've got to keep yourself going sometimes with the small achievements because the big things are hard to get. I always think, you know, I know I'm not going to change the world, but I can change somebody's world, and that's what keeps you going. And I would absolutely encourage anyone who's thinking about it to go for it, because, you know, you can do so much more than you think you can do.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're right. It's those small wins. I look for a win every week, even if it is just one constituent that I've helped signpost to one bit of help, and I get the email back saying sort of thanks for that, and you know, we're all sorted now. So even those bits, you have to hold on to those. But I think there have never been any 2 days that are the same in this job. The intellectual challenge, and I don't think there's anything that would absolutely prepare you to walk in as a member of Tim Ward. You can't be an expert and be across everything. So the kind of the skills that underpin, the ability to read and understand the volumes of information that you're given, and to critically think about it and to ask the right questions of officers if you're in a department, and to ask the right questions of ministers if you're not. You know, the ability to see through things and to really think about consequences, and that you know, that sort of, I'm making it sound very dry and academic, but it's not. It's actually so, it's so stimulating because it forces you into learning about topics that you'd never really experienced. And so, you know, particularly if you're the sort of person that can do that, and that you like the idea of being able to pick apart those complex issues and to make progress. And you're right, well, you know, technically, we'll never change the world. We will change bits of the world. We will make a difference along the way. And some of those steps will be terribly tiny baby steps. I didn't set out.
But everyone's an accomplishment.
Yeah. I didn't set out to change child benefit rates, for example. But the Population Rebalancing Committee met. And actually, one of the things we thought was a disadvantage for families was that the subsequent children got lower rates. And so we made the recommendation and it got picked up and it's gone through. So actually, for all those families for the last 3 years, they've all had the benefit of having that extra payment out. And it was never in my manifesto. It was something that came along at the time. And I saw the chance to do something good.
Most of what you do, and most of what you achieve, and most of it you don't get any credit for because you've been in the development of something. But most of the things that you feel are your best achievements are probably not in your manifesto. They're things that you've been able to be a part of achieving. And that's what makes the job so special, really.
And I suppose this year as well, for the first time, the way that the Chief Minister is selected is changing. And do you think that could have an impact? I mean, could we have a woman as the Chief Minister on the Isle of Man for the first time, do you think?
It's about time, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's entirely possible.
If either of you are re-elected, would either of you throw your hats in the ring?
That's like the million-dollar question, isn't it? You have to be re-elected first.
Yeah.
It's a leadership role. We can do leadership, either of us.
Yeah.
We're doing International Women's Day, and we've got a really good event coming up in Tynwald with five secondary schools taking part in a debating session in Tynwald Chamber, and they've each chosen a motion to put forward, and it's female topics, things that the students feel strongly about. I think it's going to be I think Manx Radio might be coming along to it.
Yeah, I have a feeling.
I think it's really important to get younger people involved in this too. There's positives. There's honestly believe there's more positives in my day than negatives.
Yeah. And I think you have that boundary around you, don't you? You have your close support group. I know I've talked about the women that came forward and supported me, but you have those people around you that support you, and you ground yourself back with them each time. And so what happens outside of that boundary, you kind of set that aside and it's like, yeah, I've heard you, but, you know, it's noise. It's not based in fact, it's not true, and it's actually, I'm not going to let it deter me, because actually it's like being bullied, and I don't want to be bullied. I don't want to make decisions because I'm afraid of what the critics are going to say on Facebook, because that's not a way to make policies.
And we should also celebrate the role that the men around us do have in this, because certainly last administration there were fewer women. And all the help I was receiving was from the male members, and they were really good. Taught me lots of things, suggested ways of doing things. So there's, you know, it's not just about women.
A lot of it is what you make of it as well, isn't it? And if you are somebody who is genuine, who is honest, who is quite clearly just trying to do their best, people respond to that, whether anybody responds to that, men, women, whoever respond. And so actually sometimes you have to be what you like, put out into the world what you want to get back, don't you, to a certain extent. And I think actually sometimes that's all we can do as human beings, isn't it, is just try and do our best. But for the most part, people respond to that and they can see that, and they want to actively then help and encourage that too.
Yeah.
And to achieve anything, you know, as a woman, you need the support of men as much as you do women.
We need our allies.
We absolutely do. Mm. And we have plenty of them.
Michelle Haywood and Anne Collett there talking to Amy Griffiths. So what do you think? We don't hear enough from young voices in political discourse these days, so it is informative for us to hear them, and important that we take note of what's being said. How do we empower young people, and especially young women, to get their voices heard. Is gender discrimination something that concerns you? And if not, having listened to these powerful debates, why not? Let me know your thoughts on the programme by contacting philgorn@manxradio.com and get in touch if you have any ideas for future shows. Don't forget, this programme is available as a podcast. I'm Phil Gorn. Goramayos and Geistachrom. Thanks for listening.